busy show to wrap up the week on Friday, January the 10th. In the 4 o'clock hour, Christine Stewart joined us from ctnewsjunkie.com to give us the very latest on the trucks-only toll debate going on in Hartford. Internet expert, worldwide cybersecurity guy Chris Moscovitis, also in the 4 o'clock hour, talked about how vulnerable the U.S. may be to a cyber attack from Iran. A couple of guests in the 5 o'clock hour as well. Our usual weekly check-in with Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly. And Eric Oben of the Connecticut Hockey Foundation joined us to tell you about a major fundraiser coming up during a big two-day college hockey event in Bridgeport. But I kicked off the show talking about my thoughts as to where the modern-day Democratic Party is going. I wanted to start out today, and I do have the WICC Facebook question as well. We'll get to that momentarily, but I wanted to start out today on the national scene today. Had a good show yesterday. Got out of here, did a few things, you know, listener email and stuff like that. Wrapped up all my stuff. Hopped in a car. Went to Westfield and Milford. Did a little shopping, a little walking around, a little window shopping. Picked up a couple things I needed. And I decide, well, before I go home, let me just have dinner here. So I go into a sports bar there, and because there was a hockey game on of note, so I figure I set myself down around 9 o'clock, right? Watch the third period of the game, and got myself a rather tasty turkey club sandwich, which was good. And so I take out my phone, as we're all wanting to do now, because Lord knows we don't talk to anybody as well at dinner anymore. So I start scrolling through my thumb, ba-da-bum, 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 and I start seeing, you know, all these news sites I watch kind of exploding with, you know, red lights going off, flashing about what people are saying about the tragic plane crash of that Ukraine airliner as it apparently was shot down by Iran as it was taking off the other night during the exchange of missiles, or rather the one-sided lobbing of 10 to 15 missiles. From Iran into a U.S. base or two inside Iraq. So I'm scrolling around, and you may remember it was either, and forgive me because the days become an entire blur. It's been a busy week. I've got a wedding to go to this weekend. I'm, you know, rearranging my hours and everything. Get ready for some vacation time. And it was either on yesterday's show, on Thursday's show, or Wednesday's show. I can't remember. But I know I told you folks, I spent about 2 minutes on it. Coming off a news break, I said, mark my word, within 24, maybe 36 hours, some nuts in Congress and some crazies on the campaign trail are going to blame the deaths of those people on that Ukraine airliner on President Trump. I remember saying it. I know it was either Thursday, yesterday, or Wednesday. But I said, you know this is going to happen. And we're discussing that a little bit here on the program. So last night, I'm, again, chowing down on my rather tasty turkey club sandwich. Thank you. Great sauce there. Trying to figure out what spice was in the sauce. Anyway, I'm scrolling through, and I see that Democrat Jackie Speier, longtime congresswoman, she's pushing 70, I think, upper 60s, from a district, a safe Democrat district in California. She's on CNN. And she said, she was asked, I believe, by Wolf Blitzer, who's about 106 now. She was asked by Wolf Blitzer about her reaction to what went on with that tragic downing of that Ukraine airliner. And she said that the following quote, and I wrote this down verbatim. I don't usually quote these people verbatim, but I have to give it to you here. Jackie Speier says, quote, "This is yet another example of collateral damage from the actions taken in a provocative way by the President of the United States." That's right. A sitting member of Congress is not directly blaming Iran, is not saying, well, you know, it's too bad this happened, but it was Iran firing the missiles. It was Iran with a twitchy trigger finger here. It was the President of the United States. I said, well, there you go. So I keep scrolling, and I see these other references here. On the campaign trail, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, actually on Twitter, he posted this. And I'm reading this last night, trying not to choke on my sandwich. Quote, "Innocent civilians are dead because they were caught in the middle of an unnecessary and unwarranted military tit-for-tat. Really? No blame to Iran here, because, of course, this was unwarranted, because, according to Mayor Pete, the top terrorist in the world just sauntering in an active war zone, wearing a military uniform, breaking a UN travel restriction he had. We should just leave him alone. Again, no direct blame for the Iranians. Nobody saying, "Hey, Iran, it's your fault." All right. At this point, I say to myself, it is true. It is true. The modern day Democratic Party is run by and ruled by crazies. Folks, if you're a Democrat out there, I hate to tell you, I don't know. I don't care how long you've been registered, whether you registered as a Democrat in the 40s, 50s, 60s, yesterday, last week. Your party is replete with sickos right now. It's nuts. It's run by a bunch of crazies. It's run by people who need Prozac, Zoloft, Klonopin, Nortriptyline, something like that. The Democratic Party is now being operated and spoken for by people who are absolutely nuts, who want to absolve Iran of so much of this because they are so bent on just having that twisted, nutty dislike and hatred for the guy in the White House right now. But there's more. Oh, we're not done. First, though, traffic and weather together on the sixes right here. 216, it's Connecticut Today. Nobody in the modern-day Democratic Party has the gullions to say that to Iran. The no-good part always goes to the White House. They sit there and they sob. And listen, it's horrible. These people were shot down in the middle of that exchange. And again, it wasn't an exchange, I should say. The process of Iran lobbing all these missiles toward the faraway U.S. bases. What, 10 of them hit? One of them never got out of Iran? Five of them malfunctioned or whatever. Yeah, that is no good. But my God, the people in the Democratic Party right now, they're so afraid. What are they so afraid of? What are they so afraid of? Well, I know they don't want to criticize Iran because some nutty pro-Muslim group is going to go crazy. But Jackie Speier, come on. This is yet another example of collateral damage for the actions taken in a provocative way by the President of the United States. Stop it, please. You're an idiot. Stop it. Mayor Pete on Twitter, innocent civilians are dead because they were caught in the middle of an unnecessary and unwarranted military tit-for-tat. Okay, Pete. Would you rather this guy that we took out have still been alive? You know, a friend of mine said to me, Tagos, and a very learned guy, we get along wonderfully. He's a very smart guy. A friend of mine said today, well, you know, they did take out the number two guy in the Iran government. And I said, well, if you're worried about a number two guy in your government, if in fact this is the equivalent of Vice President Mike Pence, okay, why is he in a uniform? Why is he in a war zone? Why is he walking around with the people who we think made a move on our embassy a few days earlier? Why is he violating a UN travel ban? If this guy supposedly is the number two guy in their country, why is he out there doing that? Just walking around. You saw the pictures of him. Why? If he's the number two guy. But it doesn't stop with the nutcases now, the Democratic Party. And I apologize if this sounds a little, what's the word? A little too boisterous, a little too harsh. But to me, a common sense Democrat would say, listen, we are questioning whether or not the sufficient intel was there. However, the world has been ridden, or we've rid the world, the actions of the president have in fact gotten the number one terrorist in the world off the face of the earth. However, we want to be very careful going forward. It's not hard. I just did it in 10 seconds. But again, when you have these people whose heads get up in the morning and they rattle, and that noise in their heads is Donald Trump. Meantime, to my business, and I love what I do. I've done this for 30-plus years. I was a working reporter for 20-something of those years for radio and print, too, covering all kinds of stories. But a headline from the Associated Press, the vaunted and valued Associated Press, quote, now this is a headline on a story I found last night from the AP. An Iranian general dies in a U.S. attack and innocents suffer. And of course they're referring to the innocent people on board that plane, the Americans, Ukrainians, Canadians, whomever was on board that plane, and their relatives. Okay, innocents are suffering. Is it because of something we did? Or is it because of the Iranians being fools with their armaments? And these are the people you want to have a nuclear weapon? Come on. Why am I able to figure this out? Why am I able to recognize this freaking lunacy? Doesn't stop there. Katie Tour from NBC. And again, this wasn't hard to find. All this was blasting up on my phone. Katie Tour from NBC. Here's what she said during one of her reports about the president giving his news conference saying why we did what we did. Here, this might get the best one of the day or the night. This might get the best one of the day or the night. She began a report by saying, you ready for this? Sit down. Or if you're on the Marin or on 95 right now, use a couple of hands on the wheel because you'll love this one. Quote, flanked by stern white military men, the president addressed the world this morning, dot, dot, dot. Flanked by stern white military men. She said it once. I'm only saying it twice for emphasis. Flanked by stern white military men. What does that have? Well, I know what it has to do, because the white men send the black man in to be killed. Folks, I'm telling you, the collective, I don't know what word I can use. It's a psychosis. It's a mass twitch. You have people just so out of their minds over this. I'm really worried about the thinking process now in D.C. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Back to last night, I'm sitting there still enjoying my tasty turkey club sandwich. But my God, what is wrong with these people? They so despise the president. And let me tell you something. I was no big fan of Barack Obama. Honestly, I was no big fan of his. But for the dozens of drones that he set out, I would read the next morning, okay, we took out this guy or that guy, whatever. He made the decision. Bad guys are gone. Move on. That's fine. Unbelievable. Unreal. Unbelievable. All right, we'll go to traffic and weather together. After the break, by the way, boys and girls, another I told you so. And this is one I spotted from the get-go. Right, and it has to do with money. It has to do with dead presidents. It has to do with the green jeebus, however you want to phrase that. It is Connecticut Today at 2:25 on a Friday. Lots coming up on the show later on this hour. Should a private homeowner be forbidden from feeding wild animals on his or her property? Think about that. That's what the state is thinking about here. I can see the argument on both sides. That's coming up on WICC.
WICC 600 right now traffic.
Good afternoon. I'm Alex Lee. Two lanes out with the crash being cleared. Route 25 south approaching exit 6. That's the two left lanes, so look for delays behind that. Northbound, you're in good shape. Minor delay on the Merritt Parkway north between Westport and Trumbull. Southbound, you're clear. Southbound 95, heavy Stamford to Greenwich. And northbound, you're slow Westport through Fairfield.
Mostly cloudy overnight. Some patchy fog. Low holding around 45. Morning fog tomorrow. Then mostly cloudy, milder 55 to 60. Tomorrow night, rain showers, isolated thunderstorms, low 50s. Rain showers, warm Sunday, 65. Partly sunny, colder Monday, mid-40s. And Tuesday, partly sunny, 40 to 45 degrees. This is Chief Meteorologist Bill Jackwoman in the WICC Weather Center.
Defend the potential of a child in your community.
My big brother plays football with me and likes to do things like that. He's my best friend. Whenever he comes over, he feels like he's part of my family. And I feel like I'm part of his family, too.
It's National Mentoring Month, and we need bigs, especially men. Volunteer or donate to Big Brothers Big Sisters. Ignite the potential of a child today. Contact us at 203-366-3766. Or bbbsswct.org.
At Quicken Loans, our 17,000 team members know that home is so much more than a house. That's because our clients tell us all the time. Hey, this is Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, and we want to help you save money on your mortgage with some of the lowest refinancing rates ever. Rates are historically low. You may be able to reduce your rate and save money on your monthly mortgage payment right now. Pay off some credit card debt, or put some money towards that new bathroom or kitchen you've always wanted. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%. APR, 4.23%. That's right, 3.99%. While we can't predict what will happen in the future, we do know that rates have dropped, and now is the time to save money on your mortgage. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to learn how refinancing now may be the right mortgage solution for you. That's 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rates subject to change. Pay 2% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
A message from Dr. Don DeForge, WICC's animal ER doc. Pets die each year of heat stroke in hot cars. Never leave a pet unattended in a car, even with the windows slightly open. Once a pet's body temperature reaches 106 degrees, life is threatened. If your pet is affected by heat stroke, wrap your pet in towels soaked in cool water, not ice water, and get to a local animal ER immediately. Have a wonderful, safe spring and summer with your pet. This message from Dr. Don DeForge, WICC's animal ER doc.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
I kept on trying, learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
We did it, so can you.
For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Psst! Hey, over here!
What?
Right here, on the side of the house.
Who said that?
Look down. I'm right at your feet.
Wait, the basketball?
Yes, the basketball. Right down here, where the kids left me a long time ago. Man, you know how lonely it is being a ball and not being able to bounce or roll?
Excuse me?
Remember when you got me for the kids? You said, now kids, you have no excuse not to go outside and play.
Uh-huh.
Wow, I'll miss flying through the air and hearing the shouts of joy when I swish through the basket. What do you say? Could you give me a little air and remind the kids of how fun
this
I still am?
This is WICC 600, Greater Bridgeport's hometown news and information station.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says the U.S. is responding to Iran.
We are announcing additional sanctions against the Iranian regime as a result of the attack on U.S. and allied troops.
An apology from Georgia Republican Doug Collins. Here's correspondent Lauren Fox.
In a series of tweets, Collins wrote, quote, "Let me be clear. I do not believe Democrats are in love with terrorists, and I apologize for what I said earlier this week. The comment I made on Wednesday evening was in response to a question about the war powers resolution being introduced in the House and House Democrats' attempt to limit the president's authority."
A federal appeals court has upheld an injunction barring the Trump administration from discharging two Air Force members who were HIV positive. The airmen sued, arguing that there is no rational basis for prohibiting deployment of members with HIV. Unemployment remains at 3.5%, though 145,000 new jobs were created last month. I'm Mike.
If Fairfield County is talking about it, so is Paul. Connecticut Today, WICC 600.
And we're together on a Friday here at WICC 600, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We'll get to the request from state officials to be able to fine you if you feed wild animals on your private property. We'll get to that in just a bit. It's a fascinating story I found, and there's a worry because the bear population is going crazy here, other animals. One other national thing I wanted to bring up before we get rolling into that here in the 2 minutes I have, or before we go to the next break. There was a story here that broke, and again, another, I kind of spotted this from far away when this first broke. You know, when Michael Bloomberg got in the campaign, and the of course, former mayor of New York, he used to be a Democrat, used to be an independent, used to be a Republican. Scads of money. The guy's worth $50 billion. God bless him. If he earned it legally, I don't care how much anyone is worth. You earned it legally. Good for you. Good on you, as they say in Australia. But it hit me right away when he got in. I said, yeah, maybe he's running legitimately. But as I discussed with some guests here, and they kind of agreed with me, I said, the guy's got no shot. He's got no shot. He's got zero shot to win. Liberals hate him because he's of Wall Street. Republicans, conservatives hate him because of his gun stance. And libertarians, middle-of-the-road people, hate him because he tries to tell you how big of a sugar drink you can have. So my theory on him is apparently playing out here, true, or truly. Story in NBC News today, I saw this before I came in, that he says, well, even if I don't, or there's a report out there that he says, even if I don't end up winning the nomination, I'm still going to spend money. And that's exactly what he's in there for. I thought that from minute one. I said, wait a minute. This guy is an uber-rich 77-year-old white guy from the Northeast who was a three-term mayor, three different affiliations in New York City. He's got no shot. And sure enough, it comes out today that he's apparently, and he can do this if he can do it legally, God bless him, but he apparently is going to spend money he set up until the November election, which is why he's in. He's an ATM. And if he wants to do that with his money, go for it. God love you. See, I don't care how much money people spend in national campaigns. Everybody says, oh, we should cap spending and the big money. And Paul, doesn't that bother you? I said, no, change the law. If you can't change the law, I hope people spend every red cent they can, every penny. You know why? Because a lot of it goes to media companies. So every cent that's spent in a campaign helps, maybe helps me. I've worked at radio stations in the past that have gotten uber amounts of money from big spending candidates right here in the state. I say, bring it on. You want to spend? It puts another frozen dinner in my freezer. Go right ahead. Spend as much money as you want. Spend as much money as you want. But as far as Michael Bloomberg, listen, good luck. God bless him. Who knows? Maybe he's going to do better than expected in some of these early voting states. But as we heard today, and NBC is reporting, he's going to be in there until November because he can spend and spend on his own. Even though he's got no shot to win, likely, he can spend. He wants to be an ATM. God bless him. We welcome back the big boss of CTNewsJunkie.com. We reference the site numerous times on the show here. Christine Stewart is with us. Christine, how are you? Happy New Year. How you been?
I'm well. Happy New Year to you. Good.
Thank you. Look, I thought that, didn't you think the toll monster was dead? And all of a sudden, like a phoenix out of the ashes, it rises up, and this is going to happen like by next Wednesday? Are they serious about this?
I don't think that it's going to happen by next Wednesday necessarily, but I think that it is going to be debated a little bit more.
Yeah.
When the Senate finished caucusing on Tuesday, they came out of the caucus room and they said, look, we have 18 votes contingent on this and this and this. I don't know if that means that they're going to be able to pull those votes together or if the House is going to agree to all the contingencies the Senate wants.
Yeah, and just strange the way Marty Looney put it. He used some sort of, flowery kind of a consensus of consciousness or something. It sounded something out of a yoga class, you know? And I'm saying, well, what exactly? You can go ahead and use that in the story. You don't have to credit me. But I'm sitting here going, well, obviously we're looking at sweeteners here, right, Christine? He's talking about bus service, about this and the other. Is that how he's trying to sell this?
Yeah, I mean, bus service for the urban areas. I mean, bus service really needs to be improved. I've taken the bus on several occasions and try figuring out a schedule to take the bus, and it is not easy. These bus routes are very archaic, and they don't make sense. There's that. There's also making sure that people know that they will not be tolling passenger cars. Passenger vehicles will not be tolled. This is trucks only. And so the people who are in favor of tolls and who would actually like to see tolls expanded beyond trucks believe that the truck-only issue is actually helping them gain support.
You know, a couple of divergent opinions I read and talked to about this yesterday. I mean, you have on one end, you have Alex Bergstein from here in Fairfield County who, you know, I give her credit. I don't necessarily agree with her on this, Christine, but, you know, she came out and said, look, I'm not going to sign on to anything, or at least I would. Now, I don't know whether or not she's going to stick to that, but she said, I don't think it's right for us to sign on to anything that says we'll never do something. Then I had George Logan on the show yesterday from Ansonia, and he said, that's pretty much not possible. There's no way any legislative body in this state would ever do something that blocks anybody from doing something in the future. And you, as well as everybody, anybody who would know, that both of these people, I think, have a point here.
Well, essentially, they can't. I mean, any legislature now cannot bind any future legislature and tell them what to do. So a new legislature coming in could undo everything that the previous legislature has done. And then you also talk about a bond covenant. Themis Claridis says bond covenant, bond schmovenant. But yeah. A bond covenant would lock them in, would lock the state into paying off these federal loans. Mm-hmm. In a way that they wouldn't be able to get out of, even if they were unable to collect the tolls.
Wow.
So, I mean, there are some fallacies in all of these arguments to be made, I guess.
Yeah. And you know, Christine, looking at it from afar, I sit here and I say, wait a minute. You know, I wonder, and tell me if I'm wrong on this or whether you've wondered the whole thing, too. I wonder what real dynamic is going on here between Ned Lamont, a non-politician in his first term, and the veterans, the seasoned guys and gals up there at the General Assembly. I'm wondering if they wish he would just pipe down about this. They could cross their fingers and hope that an anti-Trump wave maintains their majority after this November, and then they could go ahead and do it. I mean, I just, the dynamic here fascinates me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that he could also be putting his political capital towards. Legalizing marijuana, legalizing sports betting, a bunch of things that he could expend his political capital on that would be less detrimental to Democrats at the polls in 2020. But this is the route he has decided to go.
Yeah. When you talk to the governor about this, Christine, do you get, I mean, I haven't talked to him in years. I only spoke to him back during the Senate run and a couple of times after that. He seems like, I mean, the guy seems sincere, and maybe this is what he thinks he should be doing. Maybe he tells himself, I'm a non-politician. I don't care about election cycles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he really believes that this is the best way to improve Connecticut's economy and get things moving here in Connecticut again.
Finally, how do you think this plays out? I mean, if you were betting, theoretically,
nope.
Of course.
Nope.
What?
Never,
what?
I have never even purchased a lottery ticket. Yeah,
good. Well, okay. That's good for you. not that we dislike the lottery. We love the lottery. But no, I don't buy them either. You know, I've dropped like $20 in Vegas at one time. No, but seriously, do you have any, I won't say bet, if you could, let's see, prognosticate, how's that? What's your gut feeling on this? What do you think happens in a couple of weeks?
I have no idea. I literally have no idea. I have no gut when it comes to dolls. I don't
really?
Know which way they're going to go.
Really?
I really don't. It's new uncharted territory with, a new governor and legislative leaders, two of whom are supportive, and, you know, the Republicans who aren't.
And Joe Arisimowitz the other day, finally, I saw a portion of the video you had with him on the side, and he's like, hey, no problem, we got this, we just got to work out a few things. And I'm like, what?
He's been saying that for how long?
Well, that's the football coach in him. Come on, guys, let's go, boys, you know what I mean? That's his coach mentality. I'm serious about that.
That could very well be. And he is actually, he will tell you, he's the worst person to predict anything.
Oh, great.
He's awful at predicting stuff. So he just, like, he does, you know, we ask him to handicap stuff all the time, and he refuses to do it.
No, well, that's the coach. You don't tell your guys coming out of the tunnel we have no shot here. So do me a favor. Next time, ask him that. Say, is this you, Joe, talking, or is this Coach Arisimowitz talking? See what he says. Just seriously.
I will do that.
Ask him that. Thank you. Hey, Christine, have a great weekend. We appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye bye. For those of you who don't know, Joe Arisimowitz is the head football coach, I think, at Berlin. I think he's the head coach there. So maybe that's it. No, I'm serious. Because you hear Arisimowitz all the time, the State House Majority Leader, saying, we got this. And, you know, I'm watching the video yesterday, and there's, you know, Bob Dove from here in Fairfield County, you know, Norwalk, and he's standing next to, you know, Marty Looney, and they're like, you know, they're in the UN going, well, you know, we think there's a chance that we can get the proper language. And then there's Joe Arisimowitz literally laughing it up, going, we got this, we're good. I'm like, that's the coach. That's head coach Arisimowitz there with the headset on and talking to his defense and talking to his offense. Traffic and weather together on the sixes right here at 416 on WICC. So the author of the critically acclaimed History of the Internet, 1843 to the present. He was on the program once before. We want to bring him back to talk about cybersecurity for the U.S. in the relationship as to what's going on here. And we welcome Chris Moscovitis to the program here. Chris, welcome back. Thanks for giving us the time today. We appreciate it.
Paul, nice to be back.
Thank you so much. Chris, I think the last time we talked, you and I was in the middle of worrying about a cyber attack from North Korea. Well, that's probably still there, but now we bring you back in the light of what's going on with Iran. You know, sides have kind of sort of calmed down here, Chris, but you know as well as I do, these things are never really put to bed. So I guess the basic question, Chris, up front is, knowing what you know and your incredible, database of your mind and your experience, if Iran wanted not to fire missiles at us or drop bombs, but cause some havoc, what could they really do to us from a cyber attack point of view?
Well, Paul, they can certainly do a lot of damage, and as we all know, revenge is a plate best served cold, right? So they have all the time in the world to plan an attack and execute it. Undoubtedly, they already have foothold in several mission-critical systems in the United States, because we are not exactly the most prepared when it comes to cyber defenses. The good news is that you and I seem to be talking all the time about second-tier players. We talked about North Korea, who is a second-tier player. We're now talking about Iran, who is also a second-tier player. The first-tier players are Russia and China, and they certainly are extremely capable of launching very sophisticated cyber attacks. And the bad news in this story is that the second-tier players can go higher the first-tier players.
Well, now,
that's what the problem is.
Now, what do you mean? People might hear that and say, well, wait a minute, Chris. How can a second-tier player go higher than a top-tier guy? What do you mean?
Well, the hackers are for hire. And they freelance, and you know, the Soviet hackers would be more than glad to lend a helping hand to Iran for a certain amount of Bitcoin. That wouldn't be a problem. to say nothing of potentially politically aligned interests between the countries, because why wouldn't the Soviet Union want to try X, Y, Z vulnerability against the United States hiding behind Iran? Let them take the blame. They are on the spotlight, so we'll give them a hand, produce a few zero-day vulnerabilities, see what they do with them, and we get all the benefit of the knowledge.
And maybe Vladimir Putin in Russia could come out, and maybe this gives him plausible deniability, saying, well, this is not, we didn't sanction this, no Russian government scientists did this, but, kind of a wink and a nod, and you hire a mercenary. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. That is exactly what I'm saying. We know for a fact that China has helped the North Koreans in several of the North Korean cyber attacks. So why is it not plausible that the Russians, who have blatantly and obviously interfered with other elections and have been attempting to hack systems left, right, and center, why wouldn't they do it? I would certainly not put it past them.
Chris, hang on. Chris Muscovides is the guest. Boy, scary stuff. He is a cybersecurity expert in areas of business and government and all that. More with Chris straight ahead. Chilling stuff, folks. Traffic and weather together on the 6s here at 4:36. It's a Friday, Connecticut Today on WICC. And could our neighborhood feel the effects of a worldwide cyber war if Iran attacked the U.S.? World-renowned cyber expert, security expert, Chris Muscovides is the guest. He runs the Technology Management Group. He's a well-known author on the subject, too. Chris, I was really shocked last week. I heard a report, and I remember you mentioned these to me. I heard a report last week of all of a sudden now federal government, local government experts, everybody is scrambling here. And you always say how vulnerable we are. But I heard this report about saying how many municipal water supply networks, electrical networks, have very light security, even to the point, Chris, that in some areas they're not even password protected. I find that just stunning. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. And it is stunning and very, very disappointing. But unfortunately, we have a lot of people in critical positions that are not paying attention to cybersecurity. It's not just only at the local and municipal level and at the state level, but look at what's happening in Washington. We have been slashing cybersecurity budgets up until very recently, and we have people showing up at the Senate floor, holding, snowballs, confusing weather with climate. So, and we have another guy saying, how does Facebook make money? So we're not exactly technically adept where we need to be.
Chris, I'm glad you pointed that out because, listen, I don't want to be ageist on this show. I never talk about being ageist, but you're right. My God, if we have a bunch of 60 and 70 and 80-year-olds up there who it's frightening that we, supposedly the greatest country in the world, the powerhouse of technology and of military might be held at the mercy of somebody hitting enter for Tehran.
That is exactly right. And, I know you're not ageist because you're talking to a 60-year-old consultant. So you're clean with me.
Well, I'm close. I'm going to be 59, so I'm close. Yeah, okay.
Junior. So the thing here is there is absolutely no excuse in 2020 to have people in leadership positions, be it in government or be it in business, that don't have a very good understanding of what the issues are with technology and what the issues are with cybersecurity. We're completely dependent on technology. And to have somebody that says, the password to my local electrical grid is password, that is negligence. This guy should be hauled away.
It's amazing, though. Now, so, Chris, let's talk about some individual scenarios here. Now, we know supposedly that military Pentagon military grade security, as I remember from my IT classes, I almost went into that world. I remember that, military grade security and raid levels, that supposedly is the best we have. And then there's a couple of levels down from that of encryption with banking and everything. Do you worry about military systems at all being hacked? Missile systems, satellite systems, are the Iranians or the people they could hire, are they good enough to do that?
Well, I think there's two things, and I think we need to balance the answer with saying, first of all, that there is extraordinarily capable and talented professionals working for AR armed services and our national security services and our clandestine services as well. And they are burning the midnight oil trying to make sure that we are protected. So there's no question that there's human talent and technology applied to this to the maximum degree allowed by leadership and budgets. On the other hand, what one person can do, another person can undo. So certainly I am concerned about any mission critical system because there are 0 days vulnerabilities across the board. Now, I am less concerned about military systems because I know that they take the heavy weight of the investment in cybersecurity goes there to make sure we are protected. But certainly our financial institutions, despite investments in their cybersecurity, it is essentially left up to them. So the banks that we have all of our money are dependent on that. Wall Street, the financial centers are dependent on internet and systems that could easily be hacked, easily in quotes, of course. There is no question that there is protections against these things, but they are vulnerable. All of these systems are vulnerable. If people made them, people can unmake them.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be, Chris, my next question after the military. And I kind of anticipated your answer, and I'm kind of happy to hear that, you know, that military-grade encryption and security is probably the best we have. But I was going to ask you about banks and financial sectors and the ability to wipe out people's savings and retirements. And so you're saying that there's no uniform federal guideline that says if you are a bank or a credit union or an investment house operating, doing business in the U.S., you must have this level security. You're saying that does not exist.
The regulations that do exist are broad in scope. They don't say, oh, you must use this tool and you must use that tool and your security needs looks exactly that way. They set broad guidelines about how your cybersecurity needs to look like, and different institutions apply different budgets against that. They, of course, try to meet the regulation as best as they can, but J.P. Morgan applies a totally different level of security than, you know, the local municipal bank. Obviously, the resources are just not there, and they do have to have pragmatic solutions against the problems. I think if there is an attack against the financial institution, it is going to be an attack of annoyance because, of course, they can go and hack a major bank or several major institutions and wipe out accounts or create a denial of service attack that people can't get to their money. But at the end of the day, that's just going to be annoying because after 2 or 3 days, we're going to be able to recover that and no money will be lost other than, you know, people looking frightened in front of monitors. So, but they can do that. And that's valid. Creating panic and creating insecurity is what terrorism is all about.
Sure,
so
and doing
certainly not past them.
Yeah, and doing that when you create, Chris, the panic and the insecurity with, like you say, a DNS attack or you know, jamming everything up essentially for folks who don't understand what a DNS attack is, it then may ripple up to affect policy in you know, in backing off. Hey, let's not be so aggressive at them. And you said that's their obvious goal here.
That is their obvious goal, and it can affect policy. And all of these chess moves at the end of the day are designed in one way or another to topple the king of the opponent. So don't forget that we were the ones that fired the first bullet. And I'm not talking about the incident with the general right now, past few days. But Stuxnet, the first weaponized virus, was created by the United States and Israel, and you know, probably created all the way back into 2005, released to the wild in 2010, and crippled the Iranian nuclear capabilities by spinning off their centrifuges. So we've done cyber attacks against Iran, and Iran knows this. And everybody knows that we are capable of attacking in the cyber environment, just as they are thinking like, okay, so if you're going to do that, we must A, be protected, and B, be able to counter-strike.
Chris, you and I must have some more sort of mind meld going today, because the next thing I wanted to bring up was, in fact, the Stuxnet virus, which, you're right, made their centrifuges go out of control. For the layman, Chris, who may not understand this but understands the concept of a virus, was Stuxnet a World War II nuclear bomb? Was it a guided missile? On the pantheon of what could be done, how serious was Stuxnet that we used?
Well, you know, Stuxnet was, you know, and please don't misunderstand me, but Stuxnet was a very elegant, beautiful piece of code. that was designed specifically as a surgical strike against those very specific centrifuges. So it was not a blunt instrument. It was a surgical instrument. It was beautifully executed, and it eventually infiltrated the Iranian air gap facilities, because the Iranian nuclear plants are not exactly connected to the internet. You cannot just deliver a virus. So this thing got to them through infected laptops, and once it got there, it realized where it was, and it was able to execute its goal. So it was a very sophisticated surgical weapon, and I suspect there's a lot more of that where it came from.
Wow. Freaky stuff. Boy, the stuff movies are made of. Chris, thank you. Chris Muscovitas, go to the website, TMGR. TMGR is the website for Chris's firm, TMGR.com, the Technology Management Group.com. Check it out. He offers services. He's an expert, as you can hear. And also check out all his books, Amazon, wherever you get your books as well. Chris, thank you so much for the time. I know you're busy. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Paul, it's my pleasure anytime.
Thanks. Kelly is joining us. Kevin, good evening on a Friday. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself, Paul?
Not too bad. I don't know whether you saw, but the Hartford Courant has come up with some of these bullet points of this early structure of a 18-wheeler-only toll bill, Kevin. Rates could go up as soon as 2024, and they're talking $12 and change tolls on some of these bridges. I thought this whole thing was dead. Apparently it's not. Our buddy, our pal, Martin Looney, is talking about some covenant of conscience or something that sounds like it's out of a Shakespeare novel. If everybody can get, I mean, come on, you and I have known Marty for years. We know what this is about. Well, Kevin, what's going on here? Is this really going to happen?
Well, Paul, who knows? I mean, you have a situation. And you're right. Here's a late Friday afternoon after 5 o'clock media announcement, you know, Hartford Courant covered. And you hit some of the highlights. But the most disturbing part of this is that the governor wants to allow a unelected bureaucrat, whether it's a quasi state agency or the Department of Transportation or some transportation authority, not the governor, not the legislator, not accountable elected officials, but some bureaucrat, to actually be in control of the tolls and to raise tolls. And I think this is the whole Democrat plan, is to get something. We've heard as many as one, that the governor wants just one gantry. And I think that's the whole thing, is if he gets his toe in the door, he'll get one gantry, turn it over to the nameless, faceless, unelected bureaucrats, and allow bureaucracy to then, you know, start with tolls at $12 in trucks, but then say, oh, there's no revenue, we need more. Then it can go over raising tolls, include, you know, we can go to 12 gantries, we can go to 54, we can go to 80, and then cars. And this is where I think the whole game plan's going. And it's just not being candid, it's not being straightforward, it's not being transparent with the people of Connecticut. And this is why, you know, taxpayers don't trust our government, is because of conduct like this.
Kevin, it's just, and now we're talking about, they want to have a vote by, what, next Wednesday, next Thursday? The governor had promised public hearings here. How can that be possible? That can't be possible, right?
Yeah, well, it certainly can be possible when you have a majority and one party rule that controls all the levers of government. Yes, there's no opposition party that can stand in its way, and it can do whatever it wants, whenever it wants, however it wants. You know, the governor has promised town hall meetings, and all we have heard is that there's one scheduled for Sunday for 1 hour.
Yeah, by the way, Kevin, what's going on Sunday 2 in the afternoon? Oh, the NFL playoffs. Oops, never mind.
Well, there's the NFL playoffs. And there's, you know, there's special elections in other municipalities.
Yeah.
I know, for instance, the No Tolls organization is boycotting that to focus on special elections to make sure that the people of Connecticut elect the proper representatives to go to Hartford to represent them. But you're right. It's during the middle of the NFL playoffs. You know, you're going to hold this for 1 hour, though, Paul. 1 hour for such an important issue in Westport. It's not all over the state of Connecticut, because the views in Fairfield County on transportation are a lot different than the views in, let's say, Hartford or eastern Connecticut.
And so is the income, and that, which happens to be aligned with the income level, too, Kevin, in Fairfield County.
Oh, sure. And part of this, too, and another part that when you look at the whole transportation plan, you know, it talks about roads. It also talks about rail, and it also talks about airports. However, they're only putting up tolls, which is going to be the people that drive back and forth to work are going to be paying for this transportation plan. It's not the passengers on Metro North. It's not the passengers on airlines through Connecticut. It's going to be borne on the people who drive to and from work on a daily basis. And that really, I'm going to say, hits the middle-class Connecticut working family the hardest.
Kevin, hang on. There's another thing, two things that frost me off in this, too. We'll come back with you. Kevin Kelly is the guest, the state senator from Stratford. We'll continue with him right after traffic and weather together on the 6s here at 5:36. Hey, keep it right here. We're going to talk about a major fundraiser coming up connected to hockey in the Connecticut area. First of all, I want to finish up with a couple more things with Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly, his weekly update for us. And Kevin, you know, I was watching the video of what the Republican caucus said, what Joe Arisimowitz said in the House, but in particular what Marty Looney and Bob Duff said in the Senate. And I, you know what? Listen. I understand they have to put sweeteners in bills. I get that. But I really scratch my head at this. They said, well, you know, in exchange, we're trying to get people the 18 yes votes. And they said, well, we're going to improve the bus service for many of our low and middle income people in cities, which I said, OK, that's a nice idea. And then they said, well, we're going to restore, you know, greater DOT oversight, which I guess Governor Malloy had eliminated. But I sat there, Kevin, and I said, well, wait a minute. Can't you just do this on your own without tolls? I mean, do we need to be paying tolls for the DOT to have better oversight and for people in Hartford, Bridgeport, New Haven, Greenwich, Stamford to have better bus service? I mean, that wasn't important before. What am I missing here?
You're not missing anything, Paul. And no, we don't need tolls to accomplish this. And another thing is the governor doesn't need to keep holding back bonding for towns and cities that need that bonding to do, let's say, transportation infrastructure and paving roads and different things like that, which he's been doing. And it's all tied to this big transportation vote. The fact of the matter is our caucus has put forward a plan that will make all the same. There's about a $300 million difference between our plan and their plan, but we put it into transportation, roads, bridges. We can reduce the time from New York to New Haven, New Haven to Hartford. We can create good paying middle class labor jobs. We, however, don't rely on as much bonding. We pay down obligations and debt that the state now owes, but we don't have tolls. And our plan, which is not, you know, what they're going to do, tax trucks, will not force the state into a costly litigation, which the taxpayers will front, just like Rhode Island, and put these needed improvements in our transportation off to another day. The fact of the matter is, Paul, we can do all this without tolls, and we've shown the better way. And the question is, the difference between the two parties, often people ask me, well, what's the difference between a Republican and Democrat in Connecticut? Well, here it is. We place priority on what is important to people, and we don't view people's their wallet as an ATM, where the Democrats put the taxpayers' wallet right in the bullseye and make the wallet the solution for every one of government's problems.
Unreal. Kevin, thanks so much. We will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
You bet. Take
thanks.
Care.
Bye-bye. There you go. Well, folks, there you go. The Hartford Current is reporting that they've got some bullet points, and yes, supposedly it's only going to be 18-wheelers, so I guess anything below an 18-wheeler will not be taxed. The tolls will begin right around $12 or so. They could go much higher. Easy Pass gets you a discount. But the bottom line is they look like they are determined to do something, and people just don't believe any of the legislative Democrats when they say, well, this will only be trucks. You don't spend the infrastructure just to toll 18-wheelers. You don't do that. What if we go ahead and do this and suddenly a court says, no, you can't? It's mind-boggling. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. When in doubt, say screw the rest of the world and talk about hockey. Our next guest is the head of the Connecticut Hockey Foundation Incorporated, Milford attorney, buddy of mine from the hockey days, Eric Open, joins us. Eric, how are you?
Paul, it's great to hear from you. It's great to be on. Everything's great.
You're not going to charge me a toll to be on, are you?
Maybe. I might do that, depending on why not? Hey, it's everybody's wallet is at risk.
That's right. That's right. Eric, let's talk some hockey here. You guys at the Connecticut Hockey Foundation, you've got another great fundraiser. You do this yearly now, and you're holding it pretty soon in conjunction, right around the time the first Connecticut Ice tournament, the mid-year tournament, is happening here in Bridgeport at the Webster Bank Arena. The tournament, obviously, is something people always say, well, why can't there be a Connecticut Bean Pot? And after years of starts and stops, finally, over 2 days, coming up in a couple of weeks, Saturday and Sunday, Yale, Quinnipiac, UConn, and Sacred Heart, the Pioneers, will all be there for two great days of college hockey. But talk about your fundraiser, Eric.
Well, we're excited. It's kind of the genesis, and we're a 501c formed in the memory, and we'll talk about the late Jason Pagney, who was a Connecticut hockey icon. And we're fortunate we've had past fundraisers at Avon Old Farms, Ingalls Rink, and this year we're excited and privileged to be a part of Connecticut Ice, and our fundraiser will be held during the doubleheader on Saturday, January 25th. There are two games. The first game will be Quinnipiac and UConn, followed by Sacred Heart and Yale, and throughout that time there's going to be a raffle, 50-50 prizes, gift cards, restaurant certificates, and some really significant hockey donations that have tied into many friends of the late Jason Pagney. And the donations are very personal and neat. And all the proceeds go to the foundation to continue to support award grants in memory of Jason. Last year, we awarded our first grants totaling $5,000 to a couple of youth hockey players to offset tuitions. And we've announced already this year our second award for $2,000. So we're just continuing the process. It's an old corny hockey expression, but we're excited to do it, and it should be a lot of fun.
Eric, before we go to a break here, for people who don't know who Jason Pagney was, the impact he had on people, give us a quick summary of his life and why you came to honor him.
Jason Pagney was a one-of-a-kind Connecticut hockey icon who coached and developed hundreds of numerous kids, including high NHL kids through their youth experience. Kevin Shattenkirk, Jonathan Quick, Cam Atkinson, among Max Pacioretty, among many. And Jonathan Quick, after Jason passed in 2014, wore his favorite expression on his back of his goalie mask, "Everybody Rides." So Jason's loss in 2014 has never been replaced. And we initially brought the game in to do some fundraisers for Jason's family. And given the feelings and wanting to continue to not forget Jason and continue his legacy, the foundation was formed.
Great. Eric Open is the guest. Eric, hang on. We got to do traffic and weather together. We'll come back with more about the big Connecticut Ice tournament coming up in a fundraiser that you can participate in if you're going to the game, and otherwise you can donate otherwise as well through the fine folks at the Connecticut Hockey Foundation. Traffic and weather together straight ahead. More with Eric Open coming up on WICC. 11 before the top of the hour, before 6, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. A few more minutes with Milford attorney Eric Open, who also heads the Connecticut Hockey Foundation, Inc. Big fundraiser coming up at the on the weekend, rather, on one of the days of the Connecticut Ice Tournament at the Webster Bank Arena. Eric, seems to me, and I know you've done this before in some other locales at single games, prep school, and also at Yale, but I would imagine this could be a boon to you folks. They're holding it on one of the days where, you know, the four great Division I hockey programs in this state, Yale, Quinnipiac, UConn, and Sacred Heart, are going to be, you know as well as I do. We used to see each other. I had the great pleasure of doing some Quinnipiac games on and off for 10 years. And the college hockey fraternity and hockey fans in general are special people, Eric. And hopefully it turns out to be a special day for all the teams involved and a special day for you folks as well.
Well, you use the word fraternity. I think it's appropriate. As you know, it's a very close community, and you know, many of the donations are very personal to the donees that knew Jason Pagan when he was alive. And, you know, some of the really touching, you know, one of the things we try and do is tailor the event to what Jason would want and his friends to tell the stories. And just a quick example, one of his classmates at Avon Old Farms where he played is the assistant general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ryan Martin, and always comes up with something nice every year. Well, in the mail came a box and a jersey, and it opened it up, and it was like, oh my God, it was his boss, Steve Eiserman, signed an authentic for us. So
yeah.
And for those, you know, it's just, so it's really cool, the stories that, you know, we're very fortunate to have such passionate donors and passionate supporters.
And you know, hockey fans and players love to enter raffles and go to auctions where they can get stuff. You know, you talked about the Eiserman stuff. What else is going to be offered as raffle items and possible prizes, you know, during your fundraiser at one of the games?
Hello? Yeah. Oh, yeah. 50, there's going to be at least one, if not two, 50-50 auctions
okay.
as well. Obviously really entices people to get involved. There's going to be multiple silent auctions of real NHL gear that we talked about. The Islanders are coming up with a team. They've given us a team jersey plus two tickets to an Islander game this season. Sound Tigers, and they're going to be restaurant gift cards. There's going to be a lot of surprises. So people who don't necessarily win a raffle item or come on, we kind of float around and we give them surprises for their support. So, you know, restaurant gift cards are big, you know, anything from Dunkin' Donut cards to Chick-fil-A in the past. And so there are a lot of surprises that we look forward to on this
and,
too.
And not to mention, people have come out, they're going to see a great day of hockey. So give us a wrap, give us the, for people that might not be familiar with the tournament or for what you guys are doing, give us the menu once again, date, time, and what can people know about tickets?
Well, tickets are available through, first of all, you can follow the foundation on our Facebook and Twitter page at CT Hockey FDN. And you can purchase through Webster Bank directly, Webster Bank Arena, and it was, well, we're going to offer a group rate as well coming up next week. And we're just, you know, it's Saturday, January 25th. It's the doubleheader. Our stuff will start around 3:34.
Nope.
Yeah, plays UConn, and then the nightcap is Sacred Heart and Yale.
And Sacred Heart, boy, the Pioneers, Eric, having a pretty good year. How about that?
I've watched them a couple of times. Don't take penalties against them.
Really? Yeah, they can. Boy, they can score, can't they?
They can put the puck in the net as well as anybody in the country.
All right.
Obviously, you know, we're delighted for them. You know, their coach, C.J. Mirotolo, was probably Jason's closest friend. So it was a real special touch to have in the game there with C.J. on the bench.
All right, I'll be there, Erica. If I don't see you before then, I'll sure to stop by. Maybe we can hook up one more time on the air here before the actual event comes up. Eric Open from the Connecticut Hockey Foundation. Eric, good to talk to you again. We'll see you at the games. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. So once again, folks, don't forget to stop by. First, go to the games Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, January 25th. Sunday, the 26th. This is a mid-season, in-season tournament. They tried to get this going for years. It's kind of like, if you're a hockey fan, you know, every year, right around late January, first 2 weeks of February, BU, BC, Harvard, and Northeastern. They get together and they play a little two-day tournament for games that really don't mean anything except bragging rights. They play the Bean Pod up in Boston. And for a lot of folks who watch NESN, that's kind of the only time they watch college hockey and say, well, that's really cool, but I won't watch again until the postseason. Well, the Connecticut version of the Bean Pod is now up and underway. They've tried to do this for about 10 years. It hit speed bumps along the way, but it's coming up Saturday and Sunday, January 25th and 26th at the arena in Bridgeport. You've got UConn, Quinnipiac, Yale, and the Pioneers of Sacred Heart, who, like Eric said, they have one of the best offenses in the country. Sacred Heart can really put the puck in the net, and if you go on Saturday, you can also take part of what's going on for the Connecticut Hockey Foundation there. All right, the Pioneers can really, they can tickle the twine, they can put on the red light, they can, what other hockey euphemisms? You can tickle the twine, you can light the lamp. Oh, here's my favorite scoring a goal. You ready for this? You can slip the kitten past the mitten.